My name is Ray O'Keefe. I'm an alcoholic. In thinking about this meeting today, I thought of what it was that takes someone who is powerless and in a period of time pours spiritual power into that life. And I wondered how someone whose life was unmanageable could come here and find the manageability of life that allows us all to come together on a nice evening like this. And the answer, of course, is the steps of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's what did it for me. That's what took someone who was dishonest and arrogant and terrorized, absolutely terrorized, and brought me to a point where I am now. Not terrorized, not afraid. And those first three steps, of course, were the thing that saved my life. Stopped me drinking. Gave me hope that there was a way that I could recover if I stayed here. Allowed me to come to terms with the idea of God, as I understand it. And got me up on my feet and kept me well until I could find out what else was the matter. I knew that the drinking was the problem, but I had this sponsor, and he told me something else is the matter. And he was right, because a period of time had gone by, and I wasn't drinking, and I hadn't been drinking. I didn't want to drink. I'd been through the first three steps. I didn't want to drink, and I wasn't drinking. But he noticed I was beginning to get irritable, discontent, acting much like Dr. Silkworth tells us in the book, Alcoholics Act When They Do Not Drink. And do not do anything else except not drink. Dr. Silkworth says that all of us retain the illusion that somehow we can drink safely again. That we can recapture that time when alcohol was fun. You remember, alcohol was fun at one time. I would have loved to stay half drunk all my life. And I was all drunk half my life, so it worked out. Something else was the matter. I had to find out what was the matter. It wasn't the booze, just the booze. The booze was a symptom of what was the matter. What was the matter was that I was defective. I had character defects. I had shortcomings. I had to write that down. I had to understand that it wasn't only the booze. It was these other things. I had to develop a relationship. A relationship with myself. And with my sponsor. With the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and the God of my understanding. And I did that. I did that in steps 4 and 5. 4 and 5 are designed to get you to know what you are about so that you can enjoy a relationship with yourself. 6 and 7 brought me to a relationship with God. I got an understanding of God as I understand it. In step 3, I came to terms with that notion. But in step 6 and 7, I began a relationship with God, because it was a daily thing. The 7-step prayer remains a daily thing in my life. I talk to my Creator. I tell Him that I am now ready, that He take all of me, the good and the bad. Anything that stands in the way of my being useful to Him and to my fellows in this program. And of course, that's how you develop a relationship with anybody. You speak to them on a daily basis. And when you speak to God on a daily basis, as I learned to do in the 6 and 7 steps, I began a relationship with the God of my understanding. And I've told you, my understanding of God, it may not work for you, but it works for me. It's Our Father, the first two words of the Lord's Prayer. He's your Father. He's my Father. He's our Father. And if this be so, if He is our Father, then we are brothers. That's a good relationship to have, I think. Steps 8 and 9 brought me to a relationship with the people around me. Those I knew then, those I know now. And after all, what else is there? What else is there? I hear this term relationship kicked around a lot. People are in relationship, out of a relationship. I guess it's something sexual. I hope so. But the only relationships that are worthwhile are ones that are constant and lasting. I know that much. And what else is there? There's a relationship with myself. There's a relationship with the God of my understanding. And a relationship with the people around me. What else could there be? I don't have a relationship with my car. Somebody steals the car, what am I? I'm dead. You know? And now this came to me in steps 8 and 9. It completed the circle. It gave me a relationship with the people around me. And it brought into my life certain promises. I used to walk around, especially this time of year, when I lived in the house with 6 teenagers. And you know, this time of year, they say, what do you want for Christmas? And I would say, peace and quiet. Because I didn't have much of that. But I was painstaking about that phase of my development, and I came to know a new freedom and a new happiness, and I understood the word serenity, and I knew peace. And whatever had come into my life over a period of time, you know, these steps that we're talking about are not taken out of run. You don't follow a path, the path that we follow thoroughly. The one that Eileen read about, rarely have we seen anyone fail who has thoroughly followed our path. You don't run along a path. You walk along a path. You take step after step. You put your feet down where the people who have gone before you have gone that created that path. It took time. It took me time. And if you're new, it'll take you time, but you have time. That's the one thing you have. You have, I am sure, a desire to stop drinking, and you have time. If you have those two things, there is a program. This is not just a random collection of paragraphs we're talking about. This is a program. And whatever that path had brought me was so different, so wonderful, and so precious in my life, that I wanted to have all of it. I even said to myself, I remember saying something to myself, I said to myself, you have screwed up everything that you've touched. You were born with certain talents and abilities and were given great opportunities, and you screwed them up to a fairly well. And I did. And I thought to myself in relationship to this program, let me do this one right. Just for once in my life, let me do this thing properly. Let me get everything I can get from that program. And there's no limit. There's absolutely no limit to what you can get here. No limit at all. I have never put a limit on the God of my understanding. Any power that can come into my life and bring me from there to here, from powerlessness to power, from unmanageability to manageability, can do anything in my life. Anything or whatever. I wouldn't be a bit surprised if I could fly around this room. You want to see me do that? You believe that? And so, at that point, I had come to step 11. I was continuing steps 1 through 9. And I came to step 11. Now, to go back in time, when I first came to the program, long before I had arrived at step 11, my sponsor said to me, you will pray. And I said, I don't pray. He said, you will, brother. You will. And that was the truth. I did not have the habit of prayer. The 11th step says that when the men and women who founded this program got to this point, they sought to improve their conscious contact with God through prayer and meditation, praying only for knowledge of God's will for them and the power to carry that out. And he said to me, you are to pray in the morning and you are to pray in the evening. This is long before I got to the 11th step. I said, I do not pray. He said, you will, brother, you will. And he was right. And my prayer life began just that way. I asked for help in the morning, and I said thank you at night. And after I'd done that for some period of time, I really began to feel as though I had made some type of contact with somebody or something. It was meaningful to me. I even expanded it. I said, help me today, and thank you very much. And I began then a habit of prayer, which he gave to me. And I discovered a number of things along the way. I discovered that there was great power in this practice of prayer and meditation. I understood, because of the third step and the steps that followed it, that my own life is none of my business. But I am not to be concerned with me. But that's the thing that had me in all that trouble for all those years, me, all the time, self-centered, selfish. That my life was no longer any part of my business. I had made a decision to place that life into the care of the God of my understanding. My job was to get up and get going. And my Father, our Father, had a care for me. And whatever I am and whatever I've been in the last 21 years, I am a product of this program. Everything I have, everything I do, is part of this program. Without it, I would not be alive. I am morally certain of that. Nobody else in my family is who drinks. They're all dead except me. So whatever I am, I'm a product of this. And why wouldn't I want to have more? Why wouldn't I have? It's the greatest thing that ever happened to me. And this step, the 11th step, I think, is the powerhouse of Alcoholics Anonymous. I think this step is where the power is. I think it is the last of the healing steps. The 12th step that we'll talk about on January 11th is two things. It is the result of the first 11 steps, and it's our directions for the future. We are to carry the message and to practice principles. It's our directions to live. Step 11 is the last of the healing steps. This is the last of the steps where the power comes into those like myself who are powerless. And as the powerhouse of Alcoholics Anonymous, of course, it's very, very important. And I didn't, as I say, I did not have a habit of either prayer or meditation. I'm not a religious person. I don't go to church. I haven't been to church except for weddings and funerals. 35 years. I just don't go. I don't have anything against anything. I certainly don't have anything against organized religion. I'm just not interested in it. It doesn't have anything to do with me. I'm sure I've offended someone, but that's the way it is. It just doesn't interest me. I think it's fine. It's wonderful. Nice buildings, nice people. Everybody goes. It's wonderful. Not for me. It's just not for me. And of course, with an attitude like that at the early time, it was not easy for me to pray or to meditate. And he used to speak to me sometimes because I was sort of dense. At least he thought I was dense and ignorant. So when he wanted to make a point with me, he would make it in terms of a parable. He would make a parable for me. And when we got here, and I kept explaining to him that I didn't pray and I didn't go to church, and he was trying to tell me that this did not require me to join a religion. I didn't have to get religious. I didn't have to go with any group to any building at any time. I didn't have to wear any distinctive clothing or eat particular foods. I just said, this is part of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. This is one of our steps. This is a tool to get you sober. He said, it's very much like giving a gift to a baby, especially at this time of year. If you have experience, as I have with children, you know that when a baby is a certain age and you give it the gift, the baby oftentimes confuses the wrappings for the gift. If they're very young, they take the paper off the box and they play with the paper, and then they eat the paper, then they play with the ribbon. They have a hell of a time. You wonder what the hell you bought them the gift for. Because they're having the best time in their lives just with the wrapping. And as they get older, of course, they realize that it's not the wrapping. There's something else in the box. There's something else down at the bottom there. That's the real present down at the bottom. That's where we are now. I first came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I was happy with the wrappings. I wasn't drinking. That's what I came here for. That's all I want. I want to stop drinking. I want to get out of that trouble. I want to stop throwing up in the morning. I want to stop wetting the bed. I want to stop limping around because my right leg didn't work well. I want to get a job. That was a big item. Huh? I want to get her the hell off my back. Get a job. That was a nice thing to have. That's why I came here. I didn't come here to become a spiritual giant. I didn't know it was going to work out that way. I was concerned with the wrapping. And that's the wrapping. See, that's the first bunch of steps. You feel well physically. You feel well mentally. You begin to become civilized. Things begin to work out in your life. And you figure, this is it. That's not it. That's not it. This is it. This is the present. This is the gift of value right here. This is the power. It's the prayer and the meditation and the communication with God. That is the power. This is the real gift. And this is the time of year that we give the gifts. And who has given us more gifts than this program? Who could ever do for us what this program has done for us? Nobody, no institution, no one ever did for me what this program did for me. There is no possible way to give back what I got out of this. No way. That's why I don't bark. That's why I don't bark. So he began to tell me to pray, and I began to learn how to pray and how to meditate. I had absolutely no experience with meditation. I had plenty of experience with prayer, but I had none with meditation. I was never trained in meditation. I never studied it. I knew nothing about it. He said, meditate. I speak the English language. I know what the word means. It's from the Latin word to think. Meditation simply means to give thought to something. He said, give thought to your condition. Consider who you are. Consider what you are. Read the 12 and 12. I read the 12 and 12, and in there they say to us, for beginners in meditation, it is a good idea to read the prayer of St. Francis several times slowly. So I read the prayer of St. Francis several times slowly. And I, it didn't do anything for me. I couldn't meditate on that. I hope this is not heresy, but the prayer of St. Francis, you know, it's, you know, Lord, let me be a channel of your peace. It's a marvelous prayer for a saint. Makes me feel very inadequate. I would much rather get than give. I would much rather be loved than love. Much rather be understood than understand. Makes me feel inadequate. Great stuff for a saint. I wish I were a saint, but unfortunately I'm not. So I had to find another way to meditate. And now when I tell you this, I tell this all the time when I do this. Don't misunderstand me. I'm just telling you what I did, and I don't want you to do it. I'm not suggesting you do it. In fact, I suggest you don't do it. I am a voracious reader. I read and I read and I read. And one time I was reading a book called The Practice of the Silence, by a man named Kelly. And Kelly, improbably enough, is a Quaker. And this book described meditation as the Quakers meditate. So, the next Sunday, or first day, as the Quakers say, I betook myself up to the Quaker meeting in the next town from where I lived, and for the next 3 years, I went to the Quakers every first day, every Sunday. And for those of you who know me, you will hardly believe this one, I didn't say a word for 3 years. And I sat with the Quakers, and two things attracted me. First of all, they have no service. And secondly, they have no clergy. So these were two pluses for me. But what they do is meditate. They sit and they wait for the presence or the power to speak to them and sometimes through them. And by sitting that way with them for that period of time, I learned to, as they say, center down. To quiet down, to be still. The psalmist tells us, be still and know that I am God. And I learned to do that. I learned to be quiet. I learned to think and to consider who I was, what I was. and where I belong. And you know my name, and I'm an alcoholic. That's who I am. That's what I am. I was told by my sponsor that if I wanted to be a constructive person and meditate in a constructive way, I certainly didn't have to do anything formal. I didn't have to join any group. I didn't have to get a yellow robe or anything like that. He said to me, and it's worked out, why don't you think of what good you can do for your group? In Alcoholics Anonymous, why don't you give thought to how you can make your group a more effective member, a more effective group in Alcoholics Anonymous? And I belonged to a group when I first came in. We had 9 members. And I was there a week ago Friday. I was there last Friday in New York. I spent last weekend in there. And they have 187 members. Big group. And we had that practice in that group. And I had something to do with that. When it was time for members of that group to meditate, they would think about how they could help their group. And we got good ideas. Good idea. One time I went down in the Philadelphia area to speak at a meeting. They had a breakfast meeting. And it was for all the groups in the Philadelphia area. They called it the Unity Breakfast. They brought in all the groups from all the outlying places, and they had this one gigantic meeting, and I was the speaker. And when I got back at my group, I was talking about it to a couple of the guys, and I told them about that breakfast. One of the members of that group, a fellow named Harry, took it in his head to think about that. Harry gave thought to that. He meditated about it. And a little while later, Harry said, we should have that kind of a breakfast. So we did. And the first year, we had 125 people. And last spring, Jim McCullough was there. They had 1,200 people. And that's been going on now for 10 or 11 years. And they're running out of space now. They don't know where to hold it next. That happened because a member of the group meditated. He gave thought to his condition. He didn't think about himself. He just thought how maybe he could help the group. And it did help the group. The group's a very well-known group there. And it is an attractive group. It attracts people. They know when they come there, they're going to go hear a step meeting and a big book meeting and a 12 and 12 meeting and 2 beginners meetings and 1 speaker's meeting and 7 meetings a week. So why don't you try that? Think about this group. This is a wonderful group. What can you do for this group? What is it this group might need? And how can you get it for them? And then talk with each other about that. And then you have an informed, properly formed group conscience, so you know what you're doing. It's a good way to meditate. Another way I was taught to meditate, I'm sure this is not original with me. I stole everything I ever knew. But I do this, because again, I'm not trained in meditation. I have this habit. I think about the last 6 months that I drank. I have a good memory, and I remember the last 6 months that I drank. And I remember where I lived and how I lived and what was going on in my life and how desperate I was and the terror and the fear and the worry. Then I think of the last 6 months. I go back to, say, last June. June the 6th, the 11th. Then I bring it up to December 11th and how terrific it is. How everything is great. And how I live in a nice place. How I work in a nice place. How I'm able to come to these meetings and to be with you. And I make the difference between then and now. Boy, if that doesn't engender feelings of gratitude, nothing will. And that power just pours in as a result of that. The power just pours in. And that's how I meditate. Question of prayer or something else again. I had experience with prayer. I knew about prayer. I had 19 years of the Catholic school system. I knew prayers for all occasions. I knew prayers in Latin. I knew prayers in French. I knew prayers for the weather, prayers for the crops. That was a big thing in the Bronx, prayers for the crops. Prayers for the intention of our Holy Father, the Pope. I knew that.
I had all the words. Trouble was, I never had the music. It was all words. It was just words. It was just... As an old teacher of mine used to say in law school, it's all bullshit and poetry. It's all words. No substance. The step is very clear. It tells us not only that we ought to pray, it tells us exactly how we ought to pray. Exactly. Precisely. Praying only for knowledge of God's will for us and the power to carry that out. Sure eliminates a lot of worthless prayers, I'll tell you. I would always pray when I was a kid for impossible things. Impossible things. I would pray that God would make Rio de Janeiro the capital of Portugal. Because that's what I wrote on the stupid examination. And if that wasn't the capital of Portugal, someone was going to hit me on the head with a ruler. I knew it. But it never worked. Impossible prayers. Impossible prayers. Prayers here are different. I learned different prayers here. Here's a good prayer. Show me the way. Show me the way. It's a very short form of the third step prayer. We know what we'd like to do. The trouble with us is, trouble with me was I just didn't know how to do it. Show me the way. If you go to your father, you tell your father you're ready to help. You just aren't quite sure how to go about it. He'll show you the way. He'll show you the way. Thank you is a wonderful prayer. That's probably the most powerful prayer I know. Thank you. Boy, I say that all the time. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I have this idea of the God of my understanding that he comes into his office at night, in the morning, and he says to the man in charge, how's it going? Guy says, another day, 30 million guys want jobs, 40 million guys want automobiles, 50 million guys want their wives destroyed. And there's one guy down in Miami keeps saying, thank you. And God says, give him anything he wants. Marvelous prayer, marvelous prayer. Thank you, thank you, thank you. When I was dealing with my children when they were younger, I had one kid who was the apple of my eye. Always has been, I don't know. Just one of those things, parents are not supposed to have favorites. I have one. This kid was the greatest recipient of a gift that I ever met. You know, you give the other ones a bike or something, and they say, thanks, you know, thank you. This one, jump up and down, thank you, oh, what a bike, you're the greatest father, this is great. She got more than the other kid. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Now, some days you may have to do it, you know, a little with gritted teeth. And thank you, jeez, what a day. Holy God, thank you. You're a sweetheart, you know. Thank you for that pigeon who puked in the back of my car, you know. But it's still a great prayer. It's still a great prayer. It's not a selfish prayer. It's a prayer. Prayer of gratitude. Prayer of gratitude. And that's what we have, I think. What I try to remember. My meditation brings me to gratitude. And I say thank you. I say thank you. And when the problems come up, as they always do, I tell them, I say, I have a problem. Show me the way. And it's worked for me. It's worked for me for a long time. Pray only for knowledge of God's will for us. I don't bother my father about other people. I don't bother my father to make my son a brain surgeon. Be nice if you get out of high school, but I'd like, huh? I don't bother him. Leave God alone with your kids. He knows about your children. Your children are his children. This step is for knowledge of his will for you, not for your children. I don't demand anything for God, from anybody else. I don't ask him to do anything for my children or for my family. I ask him to show me the way. Show me the way. Sometimes it's difficult. It's a difficult habit to realize that so many of my prayers before I got to this step were so selfish. It's a difficult thing to realize, but it worked out. It works out for me. 12 and 12 tells us that, and this is not a direct quote, but it's close. Every experienced AA can tell you that of times of suffering when the hand of God seemed uneven and even unjust, new resources of courage were found. New avenues were found. And slowly, inescapably, we came to the conclusion that God's will would be done. And I am an experienced AA, and I am telling you that there has been no problem in my life that has not taken care of itself. Not by my fussing with it and worrying about it and chasing after it, but by the constant attendance at the meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. Impossible things have happened in my life. Things that never could happen are happened, have happened. The very fact that I live here now, I'm in the kind of work I'm in now, it's impossible that I be a professor of law because I was fired as a tenured professor of law in 1962. And once you're fired, you may not be rehired. And in January 1st of 1984, I was tenured professor of law at three different universities. Now you figure that one out. It's impossible. It happens. I sort of get used to it. And I think my father likes to hear from me. I think he likes me to say thank you. The book says we sought to improve our conscious contact with God. We are seekers. And I guess I was always a seeker after something. I'm not quite sure what it was I was seeking. I always had that kind of an inquiring mind anyhow. I always sought things and asked questions. Worried about things like that. Seeker. What were we seeking? What was I looking for out there? Before the meeting, I remembered, just when I came here, I remembered that in the book, AA Comes of Age, they quote a poem that's a favorite of mine. It's by an alcoholic whose name is Francis Thompson. Francis was an alcoholic. And he wrote a poem about his relationship with God. And he compared him to a very large dog, a hound, that kept following him. And this is much like my own experience. Francis Thompson said, I fled him down the nights and down the days. I fled him down the arches of the years. I fled him down the labyrinthine ways of my own mind. And in the midst of tears, I hid from him, and under running laughter, upvisited hopes I sped, and shot precipitated, adrift titanic, glories of a chasmine fear, from these strong feet that followed after me. And he goes on in the poem for several more pages talking about how this great hound kept following him although he fled from him. And finally he says, halt by me that footfall in my gloom after all, shade of his hand outstretched caressingly. And God says to him, ah, fondest, blindest, weakest, I am he whom thou seekest. And I think that was probably my relationship with God. As I drank, I fled from him. I hid from him. I was embarrassed to go to my father. Embarrassed about what I had become. Ashamed of my own powerlessness. Who wants to go to their father, a total failure? But when I came here, that power reached down. Didn't come down from a cross or out from a cave or up from the bowels of the earth. It came right into that gutter and picked me up. So why wouldn't I pray and communicate with that Father? Why wouldn't that help me?
Why wouldn't I want to do so much of it? I mentioned to you, and it's true, I had this feeling of my whole life that I did not belong. I never did belong. I knew I didn't belong in that family of mine. I knew I didn't belong in that neighborhood. I just hated those schools I was in. I didn't like that church I was in. I just did not belong. And that persisted in me. And it persisted even though I was successful. I was a successful kid. I knew a lot of people, had a lot of friends. Went through a lot of schools, had a good job, made a lot of money, lived in the right house, around the right town. I did not belong. Then I came here to you. And in the 12 and 12, in the last paragraph of the chapter that we're talking about, it says, perhaps one of the greatest rewards of meditation of prayer is a sense of belonging that comes to us. We no longer live in a completely hostile world. We are no longer lost and frightened and purposeless. The moment we catch even a glimpse of God's will, the moment we begin to see truth, justice, and love as the real and eternal things of life, we are no longer deeply disturbed by all the seeming evidence to the contrary that surrounds us in purely human affairs. We know that God lovingly watches over us. We know that when we turn to Him, all will be well with us here and hereafter. And I'm able to report to you that that sense of belonging has come to me. When I tell you my name is Ray O'Keefe and I'm an alcoholic and a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, I tell you who I am and what I am and where I belong. And that's important to me. It isn't so much that I'm given the opportunity to come and do these steps for you and with you. I belong here. I'm supposed to be here. This is where I belong. This is where the power is. This is the house of my Father. And you are my brothers. And so I belong. Everyone belongs here who has a desire to stop drinking. And I have gained experience through the time I've been in Alcoholics Anonymous. And it is our communal experience, the experience of the whole program of Alcoholics Anonymous, that gives us our strength. Our strength comes from our experience. And the experience gives us the strength, and the strength gives us the hope. And that's what we share here, and that's what the preamble says. We share our experience, strength, and hope. So that those who come in new, who are powerless, unmanageable as I was, can follow the same path thoroughly and come to the same results and get the hope. And I am simply a messenger, as we all are. I come with a message. The message I'm bringing you tonight is a message of prayer and of meditation, to take time. Take time to think about your Father and communicate with Him. Think of the blessings and the gratitude that you owe to Him. Think of how it was. You remember the terror. You'll never forget it. You remember what it was like. It's not like that anymore. Say thank you, for God's sake. Say thank you. And you'll improve your conscious contact with God, praying only for knowledge of His will for you and the power to carry that out.